This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 22, The Secret Coat. Pitch Vision Academy coach Gary Palmer has been revealed as Alistair Cook's secret coach this week, so we've got to talk about that, haven't we? We also answer your questions, as we always do. We have one bowler who's good at bowling quickly, but not very good at bowling accurately, and a batsman who keeps missing the ball outside the off stump. Can we help him? Listen to this week's Pitch Vision Academy cricket show to find out. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. This is your guide to better cricket, whether that's coaching, or whether that's playing, or whether that's just trying to get a little bit more out of watching the game even, perhaps. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I look after things here. And joining me, as always, are two very fine cricket coaches. This is the second attempt that we've had at recording the show today. A few technical difficulties, all thanks to me. But we're finally up and running. So the first coach is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gary. It's nice to finally speak to you today.
Good to hear from you.
Yes. And the second coach is Sam Lavery, who is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. Hello, Lavers.
Hello there.
And we've already managed to have a conversation today, haven't we, about cameras and using apps to record things. So that'd be one for Gareth to get excited about.
Absolutely, yeah, it should be interesting. It'd be good to see what comes of it later on today. So interested to find out how it all goes.
Well, you're going to have to give me more than that, lads. You can't chuck out a little worm on the end of a hook there and then go away.
Well, yeah, I was about to explain. So what we do? We haven't got an analyst at our club. It's not got that much funding, unfortunately. So I'm going to try and do a little bit of analysis myself tonight by videoing the game. So Lavers and I were talking about the best type of camera to use and the positioning of it and how to make sure that you don't have to watch the game again to get all the useful information out. So I'm going to be doing a little bit of an analyst job as well as a coach's job tonight.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, 2020, and I thought we'd give it a run because I finally managed to get out of playing. So I can focus a lot more on the coaching side of things now.
Well, I congratulate you on out of playing, mate, and I'm sure your teammates are all going to have a pre-match beer to celebrate.
Oh, they're all delighted about it, I can tell you. Speaking about coaching, there's been some coaching news, of course, this week with Alistair Cook talking about having what the press have dubbed as a secret coach. I'm not quite sure that that's an accurate description, but he certainly had a private coach, which was, of course, one of the coaches here at Pitch Vision Academy, Gary Palmer, who's been on this podcast many times. And the tack that was taken by a lot of people was that this is very damning of the English cricket coaching system, in that in order for somebody to get his form back, he has to go outside the system and go to a private coach in order to get back into form. So is it a genuine question that England have a failing high performance system, or is it all press talk?
I would say no, that's not something that tells us that. I'm sure as Andrew Strauss gets fully into his role that he'll have a look at certain positions and certain programmes that are running within the high performance programme that leads up to test level, and maybe even look at some of the coaches. And I'm sure him and Trevor Bayliss, who's the incoming England coach, will look at the staff that they put around the England cricket team. But I think this story isn't a sad indictment or damning of the England programme at all. I think what it is evidence of is what's happened for millions of years, really, in that Alistair has sought some help from somebody else. Gary approached Graham Gooch, who's worked with Cookie brilliantly over the years and had some ideas, and they collated those ideas, and Cookie's taken one or two of them on, and it seems to have paid dividends. I mean, that's to me is just good cricket conversation and evidence that things do work as opposed to not working. I suppose you could say that Graham Gooch, now he isn't the England batting coach, working with Alistair Cook, was also outside of the high performance system. Well, you know, that's rubbish, isn't it? You go to the people that you trust. You look for new ideas at times, and what's been great is that Gucci's still very much a part of Cookie's life, and he's got some new info from Gary that seems to have paid off, and I think that's just good, isn't it, as far as I'm concerned.
Certainly in American sports, it would be strange for a top performer not to have a coach outside of this, whatever the structure is of the team that he's playing for. You know, if you're a baseball hitter, then you don't necessarily just stick to the coaches of the franchise that you're in. You can also go to the guys who have taught you stuff in the past, or the guys with new ideas, and nobody bats an eyelid. It's just one of those things that happens. So I guess it's more of a cultural thing, really, than something that is looking at deep flaws in a system.
Well, I think there's a bit of anti-ECB bashing going on, isn't there? You know, they're having a go at the ECB about everything at the moment. And the coach thing, because an Australian coach, or somebody who was born in Australia, I don't actually call Trevor Bayliss an Australian coach, because he's gained his cricketing experience all over the world, working for Sri Lanka, working in the IPL, working in the Big Bash. He just happened to be born in Australia. And I think that's where they're getting the story from, and having a go at the coach education system, which I think is grossly, grossly unfair. You know, it's just good column inches at the moment, mate. And I'm really pleased for Gary. He's got some fantastic ideas. I think some of them, you know, have obviously worked for Cookie here, which is what you want. You know, we all want to see him scoring loads of runs, and he started to do so, which is great. Who gets the credit for it? I really couldn't give the monkeys, as long as the England captain's scoring runs.
Yeah, and it is great for Gary to see Gary, because Gary works incredibly hard, and he is outside of the system, and it's good to see him getting recognition for some of his hard work, because I know he does a lot of work in private. He doesn't talk about it to anybody, and you know, it's good to see anyone who's doing something a little bit different getting some recognition for their work and just sort of carrying on privately.
Well, I'd say that he's inside the system, because he's contributing positively towards people's cricket.
Yeah.
So that would be my argument to it. And I think, you know, the newspapers will say, oh, it's outside the system. But that's just to make a story. That's just to fill a space. You know, Gary's worked with school kids through to test players in the same way as a number of other coaches have done that over the years and will continue to do it. And everybody plays a vital role in that, whatever country you may be in. I consider us all to be within the system.
I guess Lavers as well. You can see this kind of thing in the where you work, because you work within a school and you see players who go to within their clubs and they work and they are within a rep level system and they're dealing with different coaches all the time, and there's different systems all crossing over each other and different and players are working within different systems at different times, and then to pick out one system and say this is the only one and it should provide all the answers, it starts to look a bit silly then, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that one system, as you call it, or one organisation are entirely responsible for a player. If an organisation or a side like the English cricket side, their batting coach is Graham Gooch, that doesn't mean that it's going to be Graham Gooch who has to be the perfect combination of coaching and relationships with every player he's going to work with. There are going to be people outside that system. So I think, as long as we maintain channels of communication and people are always aware of work that's being done and people are very open and transparent about who they're talking to and what work that's being done and what's being suggested, then ultimately you would imagine people are all pulling in the same direction and they're trying to help an individual or a group of players to improve. So who does it and who's the most beneficial and who makes the call as to what happens, it doesn't matter too much, as long as we get there and we get opportunity for players to work with the people they feel are going to benefit them. As we've kind of suggested there, you can look at this situation from two ways. You could say, well, the England coaching staff haven't been able to provide the support that Alistair Cook need and someone else has done it. Or you could say that the ECB have been very open and they've supported Alistair and going to seek other advice and work with other people and get a fresh set of eyes on it. And as a result, it's been successful. So Obviously, Gareth has suggested there that people will just want to write about it, and they'll want to write about it from a positive view one day, and the next day they'll want to write about it from a negative view. So what they're writing doesn't really matter too much. The ultimate, the end result is that he's got better, and it probably proves that these open channels of communication among people who are, whether they're perceived to be inside or outside of the ECB, let's allow people to go and do it. People will go and have conversations. They'll go and have sessions with people. They'll know pretty well, pretty quickly whether it's going to work for them or not. I'm sure Alistair Cook, the first time he had a session with Graham Gooch, probably thought, this is a guy I want to spend some time with, and this is going to work for me. And there'll be other coaches who are extremely good and equally good, and it just wouldn't. And then maybe the relationship doesn't click. So I think we should allow it to happen and allow people to go and work out for themselves who's going to work for them and who's going to help them be the best player they can be.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the team want to say. First question, declaration cricket is better.
No.
No.
Second question, you can coach confidence.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question, this one's for you, Lavers. Success is the search for meaningful experience.
No.
Yes.
It's time for the question section now on the show. So what we do is we have a couple of questions that have been sent in to listeners to this show. And we answer those questions. Then we pick a winner, the best question of the week, which is a prize of an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And there's other ways of getting in touch with us, which we'll tell you about at the end of the show. So the first question is from Umair. And Umair says, I'm a fast bowler. My run-up and speed is good, but my line and length is weak. Please give me some tips. So it's a bit of a classic one wrapped up in here, isn't it? I'm quick, but I'm wild. What's the prescription for that classic bowling problem?
Well, where do we start, I suppose, is the answer to that. You know, good run-up speed. But often, you know, we could go in on 1,000 different angles, but I'm going to try and go through it sequentially. And Sam, please jump in when I start to lose air, mate. Alignment of that run-up, and in particular the alignment of the bound into your back foot contact, is absolutely crucial. So that would always be the first place I go. And if I'm looking at video, I'll often rewind the video to the stride before you hit your last step, before you jump up in the air, to see what the alignment of that is. Because after that point, if we don't get that bit right, then we're going to be making adjustments always at the crease. And what we want to be doing at the crease is we want to be aligning ourselves to a target and letting our kinetic chain really take hold of the ground and work its way momentum up through the body and into the back of the ball. So I would always take it back to the stride before bound strike and then look at it from there. So if your run-up speed's good, can you tell me next, or show me next, what your alignment is going into your bound step, which is the step that you jump, you put your foot on the ground to then jump. So for a right-handed bowler, right-arm bowler, you'd be stepping off your left foot to jump and then go right foot, left foot into your delivery stride, and vice versa for a lefty. So that would always be my starting point. What could you add to that, Sam?
Alignment would generally be the first place I would start with. So are we getting our momentum? Are we getting our body? Are we getting our limbs pointing in the right direction? And that's going to be the first port of call. And it might be something very simple. And as we've said before, if you're ever able to send some footage in to support the question, we can obviously make our answer a lot more detailed, a lot more specific. Beyond the alignment, the next thing I'd look at would be the synchronization. Are our arms and legs working in harmony with each other? So are we at full extension with our front arm at a point where our left arm is also extended backwards, for example? Are our arms moving forwards and backwards? Are they moving up and down, which is something that we know Ian Pont talks a lot about, trying to extend forwards and pull backwards to generate forwards momentum rather than pulling down, to which might create some lateral flexion in that body. So, yeah, exactly. Go out, grab the well. We do the grab the batter by the grill, really. So go and grab the batter by the grill and try and pull him towards you, or the scruff of the neck, or however you want to term it. But that's another really simple thing to do to try and get the extension of that arm and that continuation of that momentum going towards the target. Another thing that's quite easy to analyze is, are your, when you actually get to your delivery, is your left hand working with your left foot or left leg and left arm, etc., or and your right arm with your right foot? So as you extend into your delivery stride, does your arm extend with your front leg, and does that complete its extension at the point that your front foot's landing, etc., etc.? So there are elements of alignment, there are elements of timing, which are going to be relevant, but it's quite difficult to know, because there are so many areas of things that can go wrong, and there are also so many different ways that you can make things work correctly to bowl a ball in the right direction.
Here's a related question, I suppose. One of the things that Ian Pont talks about all the time, and I still hear a lot of the time the opposite, is when people say, slow down to bowl more accurately. And the reason people say that is because it works. But of course, the counter argument from Ian Pont is that it, you know, the speed and accuracy are not exclusive things, and you don't need to slow down to be more accurate. You just need to line yourself up properly. But why does slowing down make you more accurate?
Well, one of the things that can happen with that is it gives you, first of all, greater balance at the crease. So you might find that if you're going at high speed, when you're jumping and landing, you're maybe losing a little bit of balance and you're not generating a stable base. So slowing down can physically put you in a more balanced position. So even if you are lining or trying to line yourself up in the same way, then you might find that you're much more stable and able to direct what you're doing afterwards much more effectively. Another thing can, I mean, I've got a really classic example at Portsmouth Grammar School at the moment, where we've got a boy who's joined us this year in year nine, who is 14 years old, and he's probably 6 foot one already. He can bowl the ball pretty quick. He can run with a rugby ball. He can row. He can throw. He didn't have a hell of a lot of technical backing to him previous to sort of starting with us. But he loves the game, and he loves learning, and loves doing being involved in any kind of sport. So he's a fantastic boy to work with. However, he is quite slingy, and he's almost not all the way around to being a Malinga style of bowler, but he is in that direction where he's a little bit slingy, and he doesn't have a classic over the top brush the ear, which is the method which a lot of people would like to see. So he doesn't work well. And the faster he goes, the more his body, the more the timing of his movements work well for him. So if he tries to run in and bowl at 90% plus, he can put the ball in a reasonable area. If you ask him to jog in and bowl at 50% and land it on a length, he's the other way. He can't get the ball in the net sometimes. It just doesn't work for him. So I know what you mean, that some people do find that they're able to do much more successful in terms of control when they slow things down. But sometimes the extra momentum and the completion at maximum effort actually helps people direct what they're doing a little bit better.
It's a real fascinating one this, because I also think you've got to take into consideration, as we always do when we're working with youngsters, is where they are age-wise. And mastery has to come into play at some stage. You only have to go look at somebody who's just got 400 test wickets in Jimmy Anderson to realise that he's a better bowler now than he was at the start of his career. You know, he's worked it all out. He's mastered his release positions. He knows exactly what he's doing. And Stephen Jones is doing some unbelievably good work down at Wellington. And we've played Wellington a couple of times in the last few weeks in two cup competitions, and watched his bowlers bowl. And it's been great for our guys, because we're doing a lot of the work that Steph's doing with taking on a lot of his points, with integrating that within our programme. And it's all absolutely sound and brilliant. Yeah, in the two games that we played against, and one was a 20 over and one was a 30 over, we scored over 450 runs at 8.5s. Because the bowlers yet hadn't quite mastered what they were doing. Their actions looked unbelievable, but their ability to hit the length that they were trying to bowl isn't there yet. And it will come. And it is about patience. So whilst I agree that we shouldn't split necessarily the speed and the accuracy thing, I think we've also got to accept that mastery comes into play because, you know, even Malinga wouldn't have bowled on his beat trying to hit those stumps and got it right straight away, even if he ran up and tried to do it as quick as he possibly could. We need to be patient with kids. And I've got no doubt in my mind that these kids that I watch bowl with Steph, because their actions are so good, because they're training in such a fantastic way, that at some point when it all drops and their accuracy comes, they're going to be fine, fine bowlers. But at the moment, they're not great bowlers. They've got great bowling actions. And that's where patience comes in as a coach. And I think the best ones that I've worked with are the ones, yeah, I look at Troy Cooley working with Jimmy Anderson. Unbelievable talent in front of him. But Troy never tried to rush it because he always had the image that he was going to be one of the world's best. And there it's been proven.
Our next question's from Matthew. And Matthew says, could you please advise me on what to do when a fast bowler bounces it up to waist height? I always seem to make poor contact with it. My biggest problem is fast bowlers bowling outside off, and it's waist height, and I always miss the ball. Very frustrating considering I open, and I may go down the order if I don't perform. Any advice is greatly appreciated.
It's quite an unusual one, really, isn't it, to say that the ball that really someone gets frustrated by and struggles with is the short and wide delivery, because for a lot of people that's one that people would find the one of the easier opportunities to put it away to the boundary. But I think there are a few decisions and a few considerations that can be made. First of all, it'd be interesting to know where he's trying to play the ball. So a short and wide ball, as we all know, could be cut away or it could be pulled away quite comfortably still. So a lot of people will let the ball go to a good foot outside of stump at least before they start thinking about a cut over a pull. So the first point for consideration is which option do you want to take and why? Obviously, he's got a method where he's missing the ball. So we want to think about why. It might be something a little bit more fundamental than him playing the wrong shot if he's completely missing it. So if he is doing that, then let's have a look at the basics that are going to help him hit the ball more cleanly. Obviously, if his eyes are locked on the ball and he's looking at it as he's swinging the bat, that's going to be the first thing. So are you making good, are you tracking the ball effectively? Beyond that, if you are trying to track the ball but maybe you're not doing it successfully, is it because of your positioning or your balance or your base? So is it difficult to keep your eyes locked on the ball because of any imbalance that you might have at the crease? So trying to maintain some sort of stability there is going to help you, again, make eye contact with the ball. And secondly, what's the path of the bat to the ball that you're looking for? The wider it gets, if you're still trying to play a straight bat shot, and this is something that one of our boys I remember doing in the winter, we decided we were going to play a cut shot, and he was trying to play a cut shot over and over again with a straight bat. So effectively, he was playing a straight drive at point off the back foot, which is just playing across the line away from his body. So his likelihood of hitting it, well, given that he's only offering a minuscule amount of the bat towards the ball, is probably down near 5% or lower. So is the path of the bat one that's going to encourage a high success rate, such as going with a flat bat shot or going with a straighter bat shot if it's slightly close to the body? So I'd be looking at that as well. But I don't think doesn't sound like it's going to be something massively complicated. So let's look at the basics. How's your head positioned? What are your eyes doing? Are you in a stable, balanced position? And what path of the bat is the bat taking?
Anything to add, Gareth?
Yeah, nothing on the technical element of it. And Sam's breakdown there is fantastic and very thorough. I think the question then is, how are you going to practice it once you've worked all of that out? And which one of those points is the most key to you is how are you going to go about practicing practice. And I think reverse chaining is a pretty good idea when it comes to a shot that you've not got in the locker at all. It's getting into that position, that final position that you're trying to make contact with the ball. And I've got a preference for short and wider balls. I'm not talking about the ones that you have to jump at to try and get to because they're that wide, but that people are better off playing a slightly stronger shot. And the stronger shot is to play the pull shot. And that would always be my foundation shot to a ball that's bouncing around waist high, just above the waist, outside the line of off stump, would be to introduce a stronger shot rather than trying to force it off the back foot or cut it. Because often we haven't got pace coming on to the bat. We can't guarantee that the wicket is good or the pace of the bowler is good. But your pull shot is transferable irrespective of the pace that the ball's coming off of the pitch. So that would be my starting point. And to reverse chain it is fantastic. And one of the best ways of doing it is to get a ball hung on off a sock and just get into that last position that you're trying to hit it and repeat by hitting the ball over and over again. Stick the sock on the washing line or whatever the case may be onto a frame and just keep hitting the ball from that position. And then once you've mastered that and you feel that you're in control of that last position, then take it back a stage where you move into that last position, maybe not from your batting stance, but from a position halfway through your movement, so you're minimizing that. And when you've mastered that, then take it back to your batting stance. Now once you've mastered the sock drill, then you can ask somebody to feed balls, and you can do that with tennis balls from a short distance or from the ground up, somebody underarming them at you. Then you can go into throw downs, and then ultimately when you're ready, take it into a net situation to test it. But it appears to me that A, you haven't quite got the technique yet, which Sam's given you some great, really good input into, and B, you haven't found, because you haven't got the technique, you haven't found a way of technically practicing it in order to build up the skill to make it repeatable enough that you can take it into games. But I would always start with the pull shot, unless the ball's way, way, way outside off stump and you're having to really stretch for it. I think the most transferable shot against that type of ball is to be able to pull it through the onside, because you're always going to be able to take that whether there's pace off of the pitch or not.
Here's the rules. 60 seconds on the clock, no interruptions from any other member of the team, and one person gets to talk about anything they like, but they're not allowed to pause. This week, on the soapbox, is Sam Lavery. Over to you, Lavers.
Okay, well, what I'd like to talk about is how we can best utilise the people we have that we work with. And a lot of the time, as a coach, if you're at a club, you might find that you only have an assistant coach, or in most cases you don't have anyone with you at all, so you're stuck with 12 players or 15 or 20 players or however many it may be. What I'd suggest is you think about how you can maximize the use of their time. So obviously in every team you can have a few people who are non-bowlers and aren't necessarily going to be busy for all the sessions. So what I like to do is try and turn those guys into your assistant coaches and try and give them a little bit of responsibility and try and create an atmosphere of self-reliance amongst your side, where as well as yourself being a leader, you also create other leaders within the group. So rather than just finding yourself in a situation where there's one coach and 12 players or one coach and 20 players, maybe try and create an atmosphere where there are six coaches with you and half a dozen batters who haven't got anything else to do, and see if you can get those guys involved as well.
That is the end of the show for this week. Before we go, we're just going to decide on the winner of this week's competition. That is the prize of the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can find out more about it by heading over to the website there. And we had two questions, as usual. We had Ume's question about bowling fast but inaccurately. And we had Matthew's question about missing the ball. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Matthew's question this week. Not just because of a question, which was a very good one, I have to say. But I reckon we nailed that, don't you reckon, Labours?
Oh, Matthew's question was good, actually.
Yeah.
I do like that. And I think, a little bit of technical stuff from me, but then obviously a bit of application from you of how we can go about his process to fix it is great.
It was a proper answer we gave there, mate. So that's more, we should get a free course, let alone him.
And congratulations, Matthew. After all that self-congratulation, let's do some congratulations to Matthew as well. You've got your course there. And Gareth, if someone wanted to send in their question to us and have their chance for congratulations, and have their question answered. As well, hopefully, this week as this week, what would they need to do?
Well, there are absolutely no guarantees that it will be answered as well, but you could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy is where we are there. Twitter, our Twitter handle is @pitchvisionacad. And so there's all the social media there. You can also listen to this show every week if you want to. Just go to your favourite podcast app and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us. Click on the subscribe button to get us every week. And if you want to stream the show online, that's pretty easy to do. You can go over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link. You've got the streaming player there. You've also got all the show notes and the good old-fashioned RSS feed as well tucked in there. So something for everybody from the complete technical novice to the absolute geek. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.